my fellow Pennsylvanians.
This state's electoral votes are key to who wins the presidency, and both of the candidates know it.
We win Pennsylvania, we win the whole deal. You know that.
White House versus Fed wins.
Just like last time.
But states like Pennsylvania are going to be incredibly important.
The only thing left on the board is Pennsylvania. The president cannot get to the finish line without the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
One state all four candidates are visiting today is Pennsylvania. Its 20 electoral votes are highly coveted, and the Keystone State could end up being one of the determining factors in the race.
Jill's a Philly girl, but I'm a Scranton guy.
Oh, Pennsylvania, we love Pennsylvania.
I'm glad to be sitting down today with Pennsylvania's Auditor General, Tim DeFore. Elected in 2020, he's running for re-election this year. He joins us to talk about the election, about the work he's done in the past 4 years, and his ideas for the future. Tim DeFore, welcome to my kitchen table.
Kyle, it's a pleasure being here. Thank you for having me. And happy Financial Literacy Month.
Thank you. Well, let's get into it. I mean, you've built a career in auditing and investigation in the Inspector General's office, State Attorney General's office as a fraud investigator at University of Pittsburgh Medical Center, and then as Dauphin County Controller. Not everyone who runs for Auditor General really has that depth of experience in the field. How do you feel that prepared you for the job? And in the past 4 years, has that job presented any surprising challenges that you maybe didn't anticipate?
It's a progression. And to be perfectly honest, I've never had any intention of running for Auditor General, let alone running for any type of political office. I've enjoyed the work that I do and that I've done. You know, fortunately for me, I knew very early on in my career what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And that was to conduct investigations and perform audits of seeing how taxpayer dollars are in fact being spent. And that was something that my parents actually would talk to us about when I was a child. They would sit down, me and my five siblings, and talk about government, talked about what government did for families like ours. And they would at times joke about tax dollars. Mm-hmm. So I always wondered how did the government spend my parents' tax dollars? And it was because of that, those early conversations, that I knew what I wanted to do. And I've been very fortunate to be in a career where I could not only give back by making sure tax dollars are being spent correctly, but also being in a career that I absolutely love.
Well, I mean, what you're saying about your parents talking to you about, this reminds me of the Be Money Smart financial literacy initiative. I think a lot of families maybe don't have that conversation, and a lot of schools don't have that conversation, but it's kids get into the working world and they're kind of over their heads right away, I think.
Oh, absolutely. So let me tell you a little bit about Be Money Smart. So my passion with financial literacy has been around for a little over a decade. And it started out by just understanding some of the socioeconomic conditions that face primarily the African-American communities. But in 2016, shortly after I was sworn in as Dauphin County Controller, I was asked by Professor Jay Leibowitz at Harrisburg University to speak to students at Harrisburg University about what I did. So when it came time for the question and answer session, a lot of the questions were not about what I was doing as Dauphin County Controller, but were about their own personal finance. Hmm. And these were things that they just didn't know. So it was right then and there that we initiated the Dauphin County Controller's Financial Literacy Initiative, where I spoke to different groups in the area, primarily in Dauphin County, worked with Harrisburg University on their What Does Financial Literacy Mean to Me essay contest. And we were actually about to host a conference, a statewide conference in 2020, but COVID took care of that. Mm-hmm. So when I was elected Auditor General and we kicked off the Be Money Smart Financial Literacy Initiative, at first it was to bring awareness to the importance of financial literacy. The reason for that is the more educated a person is, and Tom, we were talking about kindergarten through 12th grade. The more educated a person or a student is with regards to financial literacy, the smarter decisions they're going to make when they actually become consumers. Now, one of the unfortunate things that I've seen as Auditor General is people who don't understand finance and don't understand the math behind finance. We catch those mistakes on a lot of the audits that we perform. And it's also important for us to, in addition to talk about the younger children, but it's also important to talk about the adults as well. So that's something that we've done in partnership with AARP, and also Members First Federal Credit Union and the Pennsylvania State Employees Trade Union. Work with those in cross states. Work with those organizations to bring the awareness of financial literacy, not only through their organizations, but also talking about what does it mean for kids from K through 12.
That's interesting you talk about mistakes in the audits too. I mean, how much people, I think people think about audits as uncovering fraud, but how much of what your office uncovers typically is just mistakes or people not understanding the concepts?
I don't have an exact percentage, but a lot. There is a lot. So one of the things that I normally do is every week I just pull four audits just to read them, just to kind of see where we are. Now, I remember pulling pension audits. I remember pulling about 10 of them, and about half of them had findings because the person who was responsible for the calculations for the pension didn't understand basic checkbook math. And that's, unfortunately, that is something that happens a lot. And these individuals, they're not doing anything malicious. They don't have any intent, and they're not out there to steal anything. They just don't understand the math concepts with regards to calculating a pension plan. And when those mistakes are made, the unfortunate part is that either we have to go back and recoup funds, or they have to ask the state for the funds because of their mistake. They didn't get all the funds that they are entitled.
One other series of audits I know that caught my attention, and we published something about it on Broad and Liberty, was the school board audits that your office did, where, and maybe correct me if I'm explaining it wrong, but they were moving money from one account to another in order to avoid having to get voter approval for tax hikes.
Right. So what that was, and that's something that had been around for a while. That had been an issue for years, even prior to me becoming Auditor General. And I know that there were, in fact, there was a lawsuit somewhere in Montgomery County pertaining to this. And what the accusations were that some school boards were moving money around to different accounts to give the appearance that they didn't have enough money in their general fund to cover certain costs, which would allow them to apply for an emergency referendum exception with the Department of Education, raising taxes without having to put it out to the voter. So we had been hearing about this, and finally we decided to perform the audit, which we did, and we found instances of that, in fact, did happen. And one of the recommendations that we made was that the legislature needs to enact legislation for this, so this doesn't happen again. And so and it's so and the fix is relatively simple. I don't know if there's been any legislation to stop this from happening, but we felt that it was important to bring transparency.
Absolutely.
Because at the end of the day, that's what my job is, to make sure that government is transparent. Now, keep in mind, none of these school districts violated the law.
right.
None of them did. However, They should have been transparent with regards to what they were doing. And if they really wanted to raise taxes, put it out to the voters, explain to the voters why they were doing it, and not move money around and to give the appearance that they didn't have enough money, didn't have the money that was budgeted in their general fund to cover certain costs.
Yeah, I know that story got a lot of attention among our readers for sure.
Yeah, and it definitely did get a lot of attention. But also another thing that we're currently in the process of doing, we're doing the same thing for cyber and charter schools as we speak. And that audit should be done sometime late summer, I believe. Late summer, early fall. But we're doing the same thing with regards to charter schools as well.
It seems like with so many different levels of government between, you know, municipalities and school districts that, do you feel that there's just not enough hours in the day for people to really audit what's going on? I mean, are there areas do you think your office could use more resources or even?
Yeah. Absolutely. To go back a few years, years ago, the Department of the Auditor General had close to 1,000 employees. We now have 370. Hmm. So we've been hit pretty hard. And prior to me coming on board, our budget was hit pretty hard as well. During my first year, we had concerns that we may not be able to make payroll.
Wow.
But because of some people retired, we were able to make payroll. But to answer your question, I believe that as far as we're talking about taxpayer dollars, every single penny needs to be accounted for, and every single penny needs to be checked. And keep in mind that we aren't the only ones responsible for that. If you look at most of your larger state departments, they have either a compliance or an auditing department, mm-hmm. where they are responsible for the compliance work in their department and also work similar to what we're doing in their department as well. Because with 370 employees, a budget of 43 million, and the state has a budget of 45 billion, it's for us to do everything, it would be an impossible task. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that we definitely need to do as a Commonwealth, as far as the departments that need help, helping them assure that the dollars that they spend, the dollars that they allocate, are being used where they're supposed to. We need to give those state departments the resources. And I had a conversation, in fact, maybe a few months ago, with the Department of Education secretary, and he said the same thing, that they need the resources in order for them to assure that their policies are in fact being followed by the school districts. I mean, we constantly hear about the budget, mm-hmm. and of course, everybody wants more money.
Right.
Who in the world doesn't? Everybody wants more resources. The one thing I wish that we would hear more often is the compliance piece behind that, giving the resources to assure that those tax dollars are being spent the way they're supposed to be spent. We do things at the higher level, but I think each department needs to have their own compliance and auditing department to assure that some of their funds are being spent the way they're supposed to be spent, going to the resources that they're supposed to go to, and that their programs, in fact, are working the way they're supposed to work.
Yeah, that seems like something that should attract bipartisan support, because, you know, whether you want to fund something or not, you want to know if it's working. You want to know if the money's being spent right. I mean, we saw that story out of California this week about how they spent $20 billion on homeless initiatives and did not track the results. So nobody knows if it worked or not.
It's exactly. Well, and actually, the federal government is catching on.
Hmm.
One of the things that the federal government does is whenever, like, for example, during the when the funds were released from the American Rescue Plan, when those funds were released, the federal government also gave funding to the Federal Office of Inspector General to assure that there wasn't any fraud, to make sure that those funds were going to where they were supposed to go to, and that the entities who were receiving these funds were in fact real people and real corporations. So the federal government caught on to that. And I think that we need to beef up our compliance and investigative efforts here in the Commonwealth.
So I guess that kind of leads me to, you know, talking about beefing up the department, your intern to hire program.
Yes.
Which is, I saw it in the news recently. And is that, could you tell us something about that? That seems like something, again, that is sort of a bipartisan, nonpartisan initiative that people can.
Exactly. And I really wish that I could take credit for all of that. I can't. That's our workforce development team, which is something that we also created within our human resources. Right after the COVID restrictions started to be lifted, people across the state who had 20, 30 years of state service started to retire. And you could watch the budget hearings, and each secretary, each elected official had the same problem. People were retiring, and they were having a difficult time placing them. So one of the things that we decided to do, and I say we, meaning me as well, is as far as recruiting for the department, we decided to visit each of the Pennsylvania State System of Higher Education schools. We visited all 14. We also visited the four state-related schools, including our two historically Black colleges, Lincoln and Cheney, talking to the administrators and talking to students with regards to potential careers with the Department of the Auditor General. We just felt that it was important if you want to recruit and retain talent in Pennsylvania, go to the PASSE schools, because chances are the students at PASSE schools are from Pennsylvania and they're going to want to remain in Pennsylvania after they graduate. So we first went talking to them. So, and as we started our tour, our workforce development team came up with the idea of intern to hire. Now, what intern to hire is if you get accepted into our intern to hire program, and if you complete 900 hours of internships, which is done remotely, could be done over the summer, it could be done during the school year, and you get a satisfactory rating on your internship, you're going to have a job after you graduate. And that was a big hit. So we kicked that off in the fall of 2022 at Temple University in Philadelphia. And the first year after kicking that off, we had more students applying for the intern to hire program than we actually had employees.
Wow.
So we hired as many interns as we possibly could. And because we realized that it's the internship program that's going to be the feeder for the next line of auditors coming in. So that's our future. You think about it this way. You have a state department recruiting potential employees at a state-related or a PASSE school. I mean, to us, that it's a common sense solution to a statewide and state government staffing problem.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. And I think just broadening the opportunities for employment within the state seems to
be absolutely. And recently, we also started recruiting at community colleges as well.
That's great.
So if for students who have recently graduated from community college, we have positions open for them, and they're also eligible for intern hire program. So and I felt it was important to go to the community colleges because myself, I'm a graduate of a community college. Mm-hmm. I went to Harrisburg Area Community College, which is, one of the best community colleges, I believe, in the state. They're all fantastic. But we felt that we were, by not going to community colleges, by not recruiting at community colleges, we were missing some really fantastic students who will be some fantastic employees. So we're really happy with the progress we've made with that.
Sounds great. I guess just to switch gears from the non-political to the political. 4 years ago, you won your election by 3 percentage points, and Stacey Garrity won hers by about one. Meanwhile, President Trump lost his re-election bid by just over 1%. So now you're running again. Stacey is running again, and Trump and Biden are running again. So, what do you think has changed since 2020? Even though we have some of the same names on the ticket, a lot of the same names on the ticket. What do you think has changed, and what do you think is the same in your re-election race?
Well, as far as with me, I'm the incumbent, and I have a clear record of some of the accomplishments that we have in the department, and some of the great things that we've done statewide, not only within the department, what we've done for our employees, but also we feel that we have a social conscience as well, and the things socially that we've done in the office, also outside the office. As far as Donald Trump and Joe Biden, I don't like to make this race about a national race because it's not. It's about the Department of the Auditor General.
Well, one thing I do hear that nationally and locally is Republicans often will talk about waste, fraud, and abuse as sort of, and sometimes in a reasonable way, and sometimes in the sort of like, well, how are you going to balance this budget? Waste, fraud, and abuse, we'll cut it out. Is there that much there to be found still, or is it sometimes exaggerated as an easy way to balance things before the voters?
So here's this, and this has always been my thought. I believe that government needs to always find ways to improve itself. And by improving yourself, as far as some of the spending that you'll see, that you see, I believe that can be reduced. And because you should always, should constantly be looking at ways to improve yourself. I think that by doing that, it can be reduced. Now, as far as with fraud, unfortunately, you're always going to have it. You're always going to have it. And the main thing is to mitigate it. So how do you mitigate it? Internal controls. If you know if somebody is trying to get at something that you want, then you strengthen your policies. Strengthen your internal controls to make it harder for somebody to get at something that they legally aren't entitled to. And this is something I dealt with early on in my career when my auditing career and my law enforcement career was healthcare. And I investigated fraud. And you have to strengthen your internal controls to make it more difficult for someone to get at something. Unfortunately, do I think that we are ever going to stop fraud completely? No, I don't. No, I don't. And so unfortunately, I think it's something that's always going to be there. Because as me and you are having this conversation, there's somebody out there right now trying to think of a way to crack some code to get something.
Well, I want to thank you for your time. I don't want to keep you any longer. I know you're got a busy schedule with the re-election coming up and all that. So
I appreciate this.
I appreciate you joining us on the podcast. And thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Pennsylvania Kitchen Table Politics. Take a minute and leave us a rating and review on your podcast platform. Please also consider following us on social media for updates and announcements regarding future episodes and new guests. You're political, so I am sure that you're on Twitter, Facebook, TikTok, and Instagram. We are too, at PA Political Podcast. Visit our website, papoliticalpodcast.org, and send us your feedback about this episode and suggestions on future guests. Until next week. Thank you.